Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by John Andrews. Let's get into our first news story today. First, we're going to start off talking about the state of the city of Johannesburg and how the coalition there seems to be falling apart. We're going to be talking about the increasing tension in the ANC, the African Communist Party alliance. Lastly, we're going to be talking about the COP. So for our first story, there's been a whole rash of reporting in the media about just how tense things are inside the governing coalitions in Johannesburg. The main parties in that coalition are the ANC, the EFF, the Patriotic Alliance, a number of smaller parties such as the AIC. And until recently, Action SA was also playing a supporting role. However, they have recently fallen out of that coalition and been kicked out. So there's been huge internal ructions within the council of the city of Joburg as the various parties have sort of pushed for different positions, and not just within between the parties, but within the parties as well. The ANC is fighting over who's going to be in the position of the whip of council, which is an elected position elected by council. The council held a meeting last Thursday to try and elect a new whip of council after the last one got moved to an MMC position. And the proceeding started really late. There were delays. There was asking for caucus time. Then the parties go out and discuss amongst themselves what's going to happen. There was, lunch, then another break. And then before, council was supposed to start at 10, or at least it did when I was there, and they only got proceedings underway at around 4. Only one of the 23 items on the agenda had been dealt with. When they finally got to the election, no one, despite the ANC coalition having a majority, it failed to actually win the election for whip, and with an outright majority. And so a second round had to be held, at which point enough councillors had left that there was now a lack of quorum, and the proceedings collapsed because the whip could not be elected. So now the council is going to be reconvening on the 11th of September to try and re-vote. At the same time, we've had lots of squabbling over who's going to take over the position of Kenu Kunene in the Joburg government. He was the MMC for transport and roads. There's the Patriotic Alliance wants Liam Jacobs, who recently defected from the DA, to take up that position. The EFF is apparently very opposed to this. They want one of their own people in there. And the ANC is even thinking about putting one of their people in that position, with the mayor of Joburg, Mayor Dado Moreira, saying that the MMC position for transport does not belong to any party. At the same time, while all of this infighting and squabbling and chaos is going on, we also are seeing that the street that blew up in the center of Joburg, Lilian Ngoyi Street, which blew up due to a gas explosion a while ago, is not being opened as it was supposed to be opened today. Instead, apparently the contractor needs another week or two to finish things off. So, John, in our pre-show discussion, the impression we really get here is right now in Joburg, it seems very much as if residents come last.
Yeah, I think that's the key takeaway for us Johannesburg residents. We are disgruntled over the state of affairs. We see that potholes are not being repaired, streetlights are not being repaired, road markings are being placed haphazardly, and a lot of things are going wrong. And I think for many voters looking at this, they don't want to. They can't follow the goings on in council. They don't care who's being elected, who's siding with whom, who's voting with whom. They just want stuff to get done. And I think that this kind of story further drives voter apathy. And voters say, I'm just going to opt out of the entire system. Like, I just don't care anymore. I can't follow all of this nonsense. Because it looks like these politicians really are mostly occupied, preoccupied with their own affairs, their own positions, their own status in life. Their own jobs, their own pockets, but they really don't seem to care about the residents at all. And I think that this will be reflected in the outcome of the 2026-27 local government election. The risk here is that voters condemn all politicians equally, And they'll say, look, you know, they're all the same. There's actually no difference between any of the parties. So I'm just going to stay away because I don't think it makes a difference. And that, of course, would be a mistake, because the way you as a voter exercise some discipline on politicians is through the power of your vote. It is the only thing that instills a sense of fear in politicians, or is meant to at least, and is meant to incentivize them to improve their performance when it comes to service delivery. So what should happen, and we don't know if this is going to happen, is that all these politicians currently running the city of Johannesburg, squabbling over who gets to become MMC for this and speaker of that and whip of the other thing, that those politicians be consigned to the dustbin of history because they're not doing what residents need them to do. They're not doing their jobs, and I think they deserve to be punished at the polls. Nick.
Yeah, totally on board with that. But kind of drawing out and looking a bit at the more distant view of all of this, this really does seem to be another sign that the ANC in particular is headed for a bad local government election. When things start to go wrong in any organization, people start looking around for who to blame. And what was, until recently, I wouldn't call it a harmonious coalition, but it was fairly stable in Johannesburg. Seems to be kind of now breaking it every second week. We're covering a story on this show about some new development in infighting between those members. Relatively recently, Al Jamaha was attacking the speaker. There's also been, jockeying for positions. There's been real questions about whether the ANC can actually win votes in council at the moment. What do you think this means for sort of the larger political thing going forward? Is, you know, are the EFF and ANC falling away from each other? What exactly are the relations between the parties, do you think?
Well, I think those parties might fall into each other's arms because they probably blame the DA for quite a lot of the problems they're having. And I think that it may well be that, for example, people like Panyaza Lusufi and maybe Paul Moshatile will blame the ANC's woes on its decision to have worked with the DA, and will therefore say the only way for us to reverse course and save ourselves is to move decisively away from crazy parties like the DA and move closer to and work together with the more rational, sensible parties like MK and the EFF. And I think there's certainly a movement within the party that is pushing in that direction. It would be, I fear, for the ANC, a miscalculation, but nonetheless one that on the surface looks plausible. Nick.
Isn't there some truth to that? Not in the sense that voters don't like the fact the ANC went into coalition with the DA. From the polling we have, voters do like that. But that fact that by letting the DA into a coalition, the ANC accidentally sort of decontaminated it a bit, made it more acceptable, allowed people to vision it in national government, and also gave the DA opportunities to show up the ANC at a national level.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm sure, you know, ANC strategists would have spotted that problem and realized that this was a risk, you know, that they would be shown up by the DA. And that as much as voters like the idea of having those two parties together in power, there is a risk that it makes the ANC look worse by comparison. Of course, that was not inevitable because the ANC might have lifted its game and introduced reforms that led to faster economic growth. And worked cooperatively with the DA to produce those results, but that is not what they chose to do. And I think, you know, through their own failures, they've now landed themselves in a bit of a dangerous position.
Yeah, I think they can't really reverse that now as well. You know, it's sort of once it begins, you can't really wind the clock back. Speaking of allies not having a good time with each other. The SACP, that is the South African Communist Party, is continuing to have public disagreements with the ANC. There was news today that the South African Communist Party has removed ANC chairperson Gwede Mantashe from its central committee after he missed a number of its meetings without providing apologies. The party sort of seemed to suggest that they sort of understood that he was a busy man, but this is clearly a bit of a slap in the face to Mantashe. This is exactly the kind of thing that's very easy to overlook. At the same time, the leader of the SACP, Mapalia, said that ANC arrogance would not be tolerated by the SACP. He said that the party was still intending to contest the local government elections by itself. We'll see if that actually happens. SACP often says that. But that that the SACP was tired of ANC arrogance. Quote, "We don't want to preside over the breakup of the alliance. We have reaffirmed the alliance and its programs. That's why we're here. We're talking about the intensification of our grassroots mobilization and the people's work to deepen the national democratic revolution. There is still economic inequality in this country. The white minority still controls the largest sections of the economy. Corporations have now been legalized to take over the economy of this country. We will never accept unilateralism. We need collective engagement. We remain open to engaging with the ANC." John, is this actually a divorce, or is this just relationship drama?
Well, I think we've heard this many, many times before. I think from both of those partners of the ANC and the Tripartite Alliance, that being COSATU and the SACP, have for many election cycles past already been complaining about the ANC. And partly that may be a bit of a ploy, in the sense that as it may be for the DA, the best position to be inside the GNU fighting with the ANC, maybe that is also true for the SACP and COSATU, to be inside the Tripartite Alliance, but complaining loudly about how terribly treated they feel and how dissatisfied they are with their lack of influence, while, as a matter of fact, still retaining a great deal of influence in the ANC, as can be seen, for example, by having the chairperson of the ANC, Gwede Mantashe, also presiding in the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party. So I think they've done very well out of the relationship, and it would be a very costly decision for them to break that up. So at this time, I'd say I believe the SACP when they say they don't want to break the alliance. I think it's far too lucrative for them to leave. But nonetheless, I think we're going to hear more complaints about the ANC. And what will be interesting and what is a bit of a new development is that as the ANC weakens and its ability to dispense patronage and influence to its partners, so its attractiveness as a coalition partner will also reduce as an alliance partner. And it may be that as a result of this, as we see the ANC itself weakening, those two partners are in fact going to start moving further away from the ANC and seeking better fortunes elsewhere. And the SACP's decision to contest local government elections on its own ticket is a bit of a reflection of that. Once again, that's something we've heard before as well. It never really led to anything. But let's see if we see SACP representatives on the ballots in 2026 or 2027. I think that'll be quite an important sign.
The question I always come back to when discussing this topic is, why does the ANC keep the SACP in the Tripartite Alliance? What do they actually bring to the table? I don't know if you have an answer to that question, because I don't.
Yeah, I mean, they compete for resources with the ANC, so why would you have your competitor for resources in an alliance with you? I think that's a fair question. I guess part of the reason is that the SACP historically played the role of a bit of an intellectual engine room for the ANC, and maybe that is something they still need. And there's probably also quite a bit of revolutionary romanticism attached to having something with communism in the name linked to you. So it's what the cool kids do, is that they've got comrades and they've got communist hammer and sickles on their insignia. You know, that's sort of nice. It's chic. I'm not sure what the practical benefits are, though.
We'll see. Okay. Now let's talk about the Mthlanga Commission. That is the commission that is going to be set up to investigate, or was sparked by the need to investigate the suspended police minister, Senzo Mchunu, for alleged links to corruption. As we talked about last week, the Mthlanga Commission was supposed to start today, but has been indefinitely postponed due to logistical problems, which is just embarrassing and disgraceful. But the acting police minister, Feroz Khachalia, has said that he wants the scope of the terms of the reference expanded for the Mthlanga Commission. Rather than focusing on the former police minister and such, he says that there should be a investigation into, quote, the dire state of crime intelligence, saying that South Africa's crime intelligence has become a major obstacle in combating corruption. This report from the National Anti-Corruption Advisory Council, which is headed by Feroz Khachalia, said that they are advising government to, you know, take a bigger scope of investigation with this commission, and that it should also consider how to fix crime intelligence. Now, John, I completely agree that crime intelligence is an enormous problem that has been degraded, infiltrated with criminal elements and political infighting and factionalism and all that sort of thing. It's very not providing what it should for the police, and it needs to be repaired. But there was a very specific reason that this commission was set up. This commission was set up to see whether the person who was politically in charge of the police was also in bed with criminals. And that's a very narrow question that creates a crisis of legitimacy in the state. And we need to have that question answered. Yes, we need to fix crime intelligence, but this just seems like expanding the scope too much. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I agree with your assessment on that. And what I also noticed looking at the various stories that we cover today is the theme of things starting late. You know, so Lillian Ngoyi Street, I think was formerly known as Bree Street, exploded 2 years ago. So they've really taken their sweet time about fixing it. They were meant to reopen it today on the 1st of September and then said, you know, we're late.
I think 12th never mind. September is the date they gave now.
It'll be the 12th of September, so it's 2 weeks late. We'll see on the 12th of September if it actually opens. Similar with the Madlanga Commission, you know, was meant to start its work. It hasn't started yet. We don't know when it's going to start. When the president holds his addresses to the nation, you know, they'll start late, and there'll be postponement after postponement. And it's really not taking the public very seriously. And it I think, casts doubts on the ability of the entire state administration of doing its job properly. And in terms of the terms of reference, you're right. You know, it's desirable for crime intelligence to be assessed and reviewed and to be improved. But for this commission to have this burden added to its already very large workload is probably going to overburden it and lead to a less successful outcome overall in terms of its overall yes. investigations.
I mean, think of the Zondo Commission, right? It was this, you know, the Zondo Commission produced a great report and it, you know, correctly identified the problems and things, but it went on for so long and it sort of dragged out, and it really allowed the political heat and momentum around the issues to dissipate to the point where it sort of almost fizzled out in the end. It didn't kind of end with a bang. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, if you do this, you're going to produce the same thing. Even if it's a great commission that identifies all the problems, it'll be in 3 years' time, and then no one will remember what it was originally set up for.
Yeah, I think it's like mandated to produce an interim report after 3 months and another one after 6 months.
And then a second report after six. But there's no
second one final, date for completion.
No, yeah. There's no date for completion. So yeah. In the original terms of reference, there was no sort of timeline on this thing to be fully wrapped up. And now if you expand the scope, it's going to get even worse. There's now questions about whether they're even going to make the three-month initial report deadline, which would be another crisis as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
At the same time, what have the police been up to? You know, the legitimacy of the entire police force, I think, has been put at risk. We've got this huge loss of trust in the cops that has been ongoing for many years. But nope, the Hawks have been investigating someone on TikTok. Comedian Anton Taylor was doing a skit on TikTok where he pretended to be speaking as a crime boss. And he was basically making a video calling on people to protect Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi because this comedian was casting him as a sort of heroic figure. And while, you know, play acting as a criminal, he says, you know, I've been giving the Minister Machuno BMWs and paying for all these expensive prostitutes. And, you know, now I've made him realize that he's in trouble and that he needs to shut down Mkhwanazi. And the people, the only thing we criminals fear is the people rising up and forcing the government to take Mkhwanazi seriously. I'm paraphrasing. That was essentially what his video was about. He made this video, went viral on TikTok, and it resulted in the Hawks paying a visit to his house. They actually, I think, raided him, and they tried to bring charges against him. In fact, his case file, the criminal complaint against him, received the prefix crime against the state investigation. He was, he when asked by the media what he thought of this, the comedian Taylor said, I feel like I was in a kind of dictator state where you criticize someone powerful and they don't like it and they send the hawks after you. It seems to be a significant abuse of power, particularly in a country where we have such clearly defined rights to freedom of expression. Senzo Machuno was asked for his comment, and he said, once a person says you are involved with prostitutes, it resonates because you are male, and then these things happen. Males are known to be doing these things, and then a BMW, this person was dealing with my name. I'm telling you, I found it extremely hurting and damaging. Okay, well, if you think it's defamation, then take him to court on defamation. Don't send the cops after him. The charges never got filed, as far as I'm aware from the reporting, so it looks like it all kind of has been dropped now. He's not going to go to jail or anything. But clearly a bit of intimidation here. John, you know, while we've got this crisis going on, this is apparently what the response from the state police is.
So it reminds me a little bit of that incident. Was it Paul Mashatile's bodyguards who assaulted a motorist on the motorway? And it's, you know, politicians who believe themselves to be privileged and extremely important, showing themselves to have extremely thin skins and deploying all the resources of the state against people that they don't like. And that's really not a good look. I think it was not a good look for Paul Mashatile. It's not a good look for Senzo Mchunu. And there's various other instances as well, I think, of politicians doing this sort of thing. I'm thinking now the AfriForum guys who went to the United States, and these stories started floating about them, you know, AfriForum or the individuals being charged for sabotage, or, you know, this or high treason being considered as a charge against them. This is not a sign of a government that is feeling comfortable, that is feeling confident, that is feeling loved by the people. And so it may be that as the ANC continues wobbling, we're going to see more incidents like this, where they deploy the resources of the state to intimidate people that they feel are not paying sufficient respect to them.
So far, it does seem, though, that the barriers meant to protect us, in this case, the judiciary, seems to be holding firm. And I think that's a good sign. I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's those are sort of the early indicators you've got to read when you're reading the political scene, to see whether attempts by politicians, the political sphere, to overstep the mark are serious or are pushed back against. You know, do they move forward or don't they? And I think overall, yes, you're right. Those barriers seem to be holding. Then the case of the Mashatile bodyguards, I think there we're not really seeing those bodyguards having been held to account now. I'm not sure if that case is still ongoing. Latest I heard, they were still appearing before court but hadn't been found guilty.
Yeah, it's all, that's part of the problem with all this, I suppose. The court system is just so slow that a lot of these issues take ages to resolve. But at least in this case, Anton Taylor was not charged. Apparently, they were thinking of charging him with some violation of the Cyber Crimes Act, but dropped the charges, quote, due to a lack of reasonable prospects of successful prosecution. Well, I could have told you that. Anyway, gross stuff, an attack on free speech, but definitely something that we need to keep a very keen eye on. But anyway, thank you for watching today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.